Okay, so this was the real-life Scooby-Doo Oregon, 1974, but the mystery wasn't fake, and the dog wouldn't go near the basement. We are diving deep today into one of the most unsettling, yet somehow still largely forgotten stories out there. It's this mix of true crime and, well, media folklore, the vanishing of the cast and crew of the mystery dogs.
That's absolutely right. And our mission here, is really specific. We need to separate the hard facts, the things we can actually point to, like production reports, security footage timestamps, witness reactions that were documented from the legend that just exploded around this thing in 74. The original accounts, they're sparse but chilling. And they line up remarkably well across different initial reports, like consistency. That's exactly why the folklore became so potent when the proof, the evidence, just disappeared later on.
Right. And we're drawing mainly from those early reports, the ones detailing this really low-budget production, the Mystery Docs, how short its life was, how strange, and how it just abruptly ended. We'll also bring in some concepts from, like, investigative analysis, methods used when data gets wiped, intentionally or not.
Exactly. And understanding that framework helps us see why the cleanup afterwards, the act of erasure of the evidence, isn't just some side note. It's a critical part of the whole story. It tells you something important happened.
Yeah, the speed they scrubbed everything is, wow. So for you listening, this story, it's a perfect kind of terrifying example of how objective facts, like a very specific time on a security tape, 2:13 a.m., can twist and harden into this lasting urban myth, precisely because the official records got so thoroughly wiped out.
That lack of resolution, the silence left behind, that's what really cranks up the fear factor here.
Okay, let's set the scene first. To really get the horror, you have to appreciate how mundane it all started. Oregon, 1974. Picture a small regional TV studio, probably stuck in some repurposed warehouse, or a dingy industrial park space.
Oh, yeah. Money was clearly tight. Desperately tight. They were trying to launch this super cheap kids show, The Mystery Dogs. It was obviously meant to be like a local cash grab. Riding that wave of talking animals and kid detectives, that was huge back then.
And the production values, barely there,
Oh,
right?
absolutely non-existent. The whole operation just screams budget cuts. The premise, four local teen actors solving these fake hauntings each week. And their supposed leader, a talking Great Dane named Rufus.
But the talking part was always going to be added later.
Right, exactly. Low-tech reality. Rufus was a real dog, a big Great Dane, the voiceover, the cartoon personality, that was all meant for post-production. Way cheaper that way.
So imagine this set. We're talking maximum cheapness, flimsy plywood sets, probably thrown together fast. The main piece was this thing they call the haunted house flat.
It's just a giant painted backdrop, basically, made to look like a spooky mansion front. Flimsy, two-dimensional, completely fake up close.
And the whole point of the show was that the kids debunked the fake hauntings represented by the scenery. That contrast between the cheesy fake spooks and what actually happened on that same stage, it's just central to the whole thing.
And that low budget pressure, it transfers right onto the people. You've got the four young actors, probably local high school kids, maybe just graduated, trying to earn a bit of cash, get a foot in the door.
And the producer, Dempsey.
Right, Dempsey, he was the one driving this whole thing, juggling a non-existent budget, impossible deadlines, probably pulling his hair out. And crucially, none of them, the four teens and Dempsey, they never clocked out that last night.
Gone. And then there's Rufus, the star. But there were kind of two Rufuses, right?
Yeah, that's a fascinating detail. You had the real dog on set. But for promos, maybe some key shots where they needed the talking dog vibe before post-production, they used this separate prop, a cheap foam dog
Like
mask.
a mascot head.
Exactly. Really low quality costume piece, meant to represent the cartoon voice of Rufus. We absolutely need to keep that distinction clear. The real live animal versus this cheap cartoon prop mask. Because that foam mask, it shows up again later, chillingly.
Okay, so the show itself, the concept, totally harmless, makes what happens next even weirder.
Totally. Early episodes aired. Apparently, they were just bad. Poor lighting, shaky acting, what you'd expect, really. But then, maybe halfway through the first season they were trying to shoot, small things started going wrong.
Not big disasters.
No, that's the thing. Subtle stuff, creeping unease, more than just, the usual chaos of a rushed production.
And Rufus the dog, he was the first real sign something was off. I mean, couldn't it just have been bad wiring or rats or just messiness?
Well, that's the logical first thought, right? Low budget sets have issues, electrical faults, forgotten props, mistakes happen.
Okay.
Rufus's behavior seemed to go beyond that normal chaos. He really became the canary in the coal mine, the first warning sign.
So what was he doing?
Yeah.
A growling.
Yeah, the first big thing was the growling. He started growling, but not at people, not at anything visible, at empty hallways, according to the reports, especially hallways leading away from the main soundstage. Dogs, you know, their senses are just leagues beyond ours. Smell, hearing. What struck investigators was how consistent it was. Repeatedly growling at these unseen areas, it immediately suggests something or someone was in the studio that shouldn't have been, hiding, or maybe just there, outside our perception.
And the second thing with Rufus was location-specific. That feels even stronger.
Absolutely. The basement stairs, he just refused, flat-out refused to go anywhere near them. Would plant his feet, whine, physically resist being moved that way.
Wow.
And you hear this in missing persons cases, right? Or places where something violent happened. Animals often react first. To fear, to violence, maybe even to remains. The basement in this story, it became the silent geographic marker. Something was wrong there weeks before the end. We definitely need to circle back to that.
Okay, so while Rufus is giving these warnings, the production itself is having problems. Physical stuff.
Precisely. Things that weren't just the dog. Prop doors, you know, part of that plywood haunted house set, they kept finding them ajar, unlocked, sometimes slightly moved from where they were supposed to be marked.
After the set was locked down.
Yeah. Suggests someone was moving around unauthorized at night. Happened often enough that the crew started getting edgy, blaming each other for carelessness. But it felt like more than just forgetting. A repeated pattern. Subtle intrusion.
And the tech failures, too. That adds to the creepy vibe.
Oh, yeah. Equally baffling. Those little red tally lights on the cameras, the ones that show when it's recording, they were reported flickering, on and off, even when no one was operating the camera, when the system was supposed to be off or just on standby. It creates this atmosphere, right? Escalating sabotage or like the folklore hints. Some other thing messing with the equipment. Was it a really elaborate prank? Yeah. Or was the studio itself somehow compromised? People started asking that.
And the natural reaction on a set like that under pressure is just denial. Pretend it's not happening.
That's the human tragedy layered on top, isn't it? The remaining crew, reportedly, they tried to brush it off. Good PR, they called it. Like, oh, it's accidentally adding to the spooky vibe of the show. Method acting by mistake.
But that couldn't hold.
No. Denial didn't stop the consequences. Night shoots started running later and later. Lost time, checking equipment constantly. The pressure on Dempsey just ratcheted up enormously. And then a key person leaves. A stagehand.
Someone who knows the set inside out.
Exactly. Knows the props, the electrics, quits. Abruptly. No notice. That tells you the vibe had shifted from just stressful to genuinely toxic or scary.
And Dempsey, facing collapse, makes a bad call.
He did. He doubled down, insisted they finish the season. One last massive marathon night shoot. Just pushed through until all the footage was in the can. Never mind the anxiety, never mind the weirdness. That final desperate decision. It set the stage perfectly for what the security camera caught at 2:13 a.m.
Okay, so this is where it shifts. From the creepy anecdotes, the dog's behavior, the flickering lights, to actual documented evidence, the security tape. This is the anchor, isn't it?
It really is. That tape is the only objective record we have of those final moments before those five people just vanished. And we know the exact time because of the timestamp burned onto the footage itself.
2:43 a.m. What does it show?
Right, 2:43 a.m. The crew's filming a scene. Right there in front of that painted haunted house flat, first thing, the environment goes haywire. The studio lights, those big, long, fluorescent Kino lights, they stutter violently, flicker like crazy.
Plunging them into darkness.
Brief moments of near darkness, yeah. Blinding flashes, then dark. Not a slow dimming. A sudden, jarring visual stutter.
And right after that, the camera moves. This is the key part.
This is the critical piece of physical evidence. Event two, the camera doesn't just stop recording. It doesn't pan smoothly. It does the sharp, tiny nudge left, just a little bump.
Like someone bumped into it.
Exactly. Forensic analysis suggested it was like someone brushed the pan bar, the handle you use to move the camera side to side. Maybe passing by in the dark, maybe fumbling near the equipment when the lights went nuts.
But that proves someone was right there, near the camera?
Or interacting with it, yeah. It raises the huge question, was it accidental contact, someone scrambling in the chaos? Or was it deliberate, someone moving the camera at that exact moment? The tiny shift suggests a human presence right there, pointing the camera right at, well, at what happened next.
And that nudge, it shifts the frame just enough and captures something that would have been missed. The source of the mystery isn't the fake horror scene, it's behind the fake wall.
The irony is just perfect, isn't it? Behind the flimsy painted haunted house flat, the symbol of the fake mystery. And as the camera nudges, in that moment of shadow from the flickering lights, a figure appears. But it's the attire. That's what turns it from just a glitch into pure nightmare fuel.
The figure is standing there, wearing the foam dog mask, the cheap promo one.
The exact same cheap foam dog mask used for the mystery dog's promo photos. Not Rufus, the real dog. The cartoonish, goofy mascot mask.
Oh my God.
That detail just screams inside job, doesn't it? Or at least something deeply personal. Why would some random killer choose that specific low-budget symbol of this show? Using the show's own props, the mask, the backdrop, it feels staged, almost ritualistic.
Like the threat was internal. Or knew the show intimately.
That's what it strongly suggests. Someone familiar with the set, the symbols. It's like meta-horror captured right there at 2:13 a.m. The show's cheap, fictional identity somehow weaponized against the people making it.
And the footage cuts out there. Nothing after.
Yeah.
Morning comes. Studio's quiet.
Eerily quiet. The four young actors, producer Dempsey, they never clocked out, never left the building, just vanished, completely gone after that 2.13 a.m. moment.
The only one left, the only living thing found nearby, was Rufus.
The only survivor, yeah. The only witness who couldn't talk but clearly experienced something awful.
I found him locked in the van, the studio transport van.
Right, parked just outside the soundstage. And he wasn't okay. He was found pawing frantically at the van's glass, whining nonstop, just immense psychological distress. The dog was found traumatized. The five humans were not. The van, not the empty stage, held the key witness.
And when they opened the van?
When investigators finally got the van door open, the reports are very specific in their restraint. They just state, the smell hits first.
Oh, God.
That sensory detail, without any specifics, it immediately tells you something traumatic, biological maybe, chemical perhaps, had happened inside that small contained space.
And the officer's reactions.
Immediate and extreme. According to the sources, the first responders opened the van, saw whatever was inside, and were just horrified, stunned, standing there, unable to process the scene right away.
And again, the sources don't say what they saw, just that the reaction was overwhelming shock.
Exactly. And that extreme reaction, that stunned horror from people trained to deal with awful things, it implies a scene far beyond a typical crime, something immediate, visceral, maybe fundamentally outside normal experience. Even for them, it shattered their composure.
So whatever happened in that van?
Yeah.
It wasn't just that they'd left. It was something extreme.
Yeah.
Contained right there.
The psychological reaction of those first officers becomes, weirdly, the main surviving evidence about the nature of what happened inside.
And the fallout was immediate. Show canceled, studio full.
Instantly. Production halts, shows pulled. The little local studio under that intense scrutiny, the missing persons case, the local notoriety, just couldn't survive. Folded shortly after.
Which leads to the next layer. The disappearance of the records. The erasure.
Yes. This is where the physical vanishing shifts into, like, institutional vanishing. Mm-hmm. The security footage, the pilot episode reruns they might have had, even the tapes of the few episodes that aired, they were quickly mislabeled, filed wrong. Or, in the case of that crucial 2.13 a.m. footage, eventually just misplaced, gone.
And that pattern, the missing data, that's significant in itself, right? It's not just losing things.
Absolutely. In investigative analysis, this is classic. When sensitive stuff happens, records tend to vanish. You could almost say erasure becomes the evidence. When tapes disappear like that, it's a powerful sign that something profound happened, something hard to explain, legally tricky, maybe just devastating.
It wasn't accidental.
Probably not, or at least convenient negligence. The evidence was just rendered unavailable. That deliberate or negligent disappearance of the main record. Ironically, it's the strongest confirmation that the incident was catastrophic, something that demanded swift institutional silence.
Five people gone, traumatized dog, a van horror, missing tapes, no official answers. What happens then?
Then the void gets filled, right? The local community, with nothing concrete, starts trading stories, inventing, embellishing. This is how the legend of the mystery dogs really takes root and lasts.
And the theories covered everything.
Oh, yeah, all reflecting different fears. Was it a copycat killer? Drawn by that creepy dog mask symbolism, was it some kind of, like, local crime syndicate thing? Using the isolated studio, maybe things went wrong, a violent cleanup? Or simpler, maybe darker? An inside job, that stagehand who quit, using the show's own props for revenge.
And the lack of answers just fuels it all.
Exactly. It fits the pattern of these media legends perfectly. Because the official records vanished, because the tapes were pulled, The mystery is way more powerful than any boring police report could ever be.
Yeah.
We don't have closure. We have that one fleeting, terrifying moment at 2:38 a.m. then. Silence. The legend feeds on that. Every generation can project its own anxieties onto it.
Let's go back to Rufus, though. Could his early anxiety, the growling, the basement thing, could it just have been the stress of the set?
Well, stress affects animals, sure. But the reports emphasize the specificity. The basement aversion.
Yeah.
The growling at empty hallways. It wasn't just general anxiety. Right. And the final provocative idea here is maybe animals do notice impending violence or missing people before the cameras roll, before the paperwork gets filed.
His anxiety was localized, persistent.
Right. He was the only witness, the only survivor, and he refused those basement stairs weeks earlier. It suggests the threat, whatever it was already there, already localized, maybe using the building structure, maybe the basement itself, long before Dempsey forced that final shoot.
Rufus smelled the danger. Or
maybe
the truth about someone already missing, hidden. Weeks ahead of time.
It makes you wonder, in this world where everything feels documented, overshared, this story reminds you that sometimes the missing data, the lost tapes, what was really in that van, the thing that horrified the officers, that's the most powerful part of the puzzle. The fact we don't have the answer, that's what locks in the terror. Turns this small local tragedy into this lasting piece of dark folklore.
So let's synthesize this for you, the listener. We started with this ultra-low-budget kids show. Ended in total, systematic vanishing. Remember the key anchors of this chilling legend. The cheap plywood set. The ignored warnings from the only real witness, Rufus the dog. That precise, critical timestamp. 2:13 a.m. The deeply unsettling image of that figure in the cartoon dog mask. And then the total erasure of the five people and the primary evidence.
And that erasure. It didn't hide the truth. In a way, it became the ultimate proof of how bad it really was.
And we'll leave you with this final thought. Straight from the sources, the physical scene. On that dark soundstage in Oregon, that painted haunted house flat, it still leans there, a flimsy facade over a huge void. And if you could just lift the corner of that fake wall just enough, you'd see exactly what the camera saw for that split second, before it cut out, before the nudge. Nothing definitive, just shadow and movement, and somehow, that's worse.
So, consider this. What was Rufus smelling near those basement stairs that first week? Was it just bad plumbing? Or was he smelling the presence of that masked figure already making that studio their own, long before the final night?
Something that was already there, patiently waiting for the cameras to roll.